Okay, thanks. Good morning, everybody. I'm going to give you a brief update based on Agenda Paper 1 and then on Agenda Papers 1A and 1B. Agenda Paper 1 is a summary of what's happened since your last meetings. I'll pick out a couple of things and I'll focus on things that we're not going to be otherwise discussing at this meeting. So in terms of what's changed over the last few months, probably one of the biggest things is that we've issued the new conceptual framework. There's a summary here of what's changed and what we thought about during the project. And if you're interested, there's a pile of those on the table in the corner of the room over there. I'm roughly following the order of the paper, by the way. I'm on page 2 now. Later this month, we plan to publish the discussion paper on financial instruments with characteristics of equity, so the debt-equity distinction, which is a subject we've discussed with both groups several times. The next topic I wanted to mention is the post-implementation review of IFRS 13 on fair value measurement. The board has finished digesting all the feedback we received and has decided that we will consider disclosure about fair values as one of the possible topics for the standards, the targeted standards level review, which we'll be discussing later on today. Otherwise, the board's not planning to do any separate discrete projects on anything related to IFRS 13. The next item is segment reporting. We had an exposure draft out, I guess it must have been last year probably, maybe even the year before, I think last year. And the board ultimately decided not to pursue the proposals in that exposure draft. There were 9 separate sets of proposals in the exposure draft. The board decided that, in the light of the feedback, that it would favour 4 of them, but that collectively those 4 weren't really sufficient improvements to make it worthwhile proceeding with that. So the board's got no plans at the moment to work any further on segment reporting. On goodwill and impairment, the board has been discussing that fairly intensively over the last 3 or 4 months. Still really to decide what the next step is. Could be a discussion paper, for example, talking about the various things the board has explored. We've talked about various components of that with you several times over the last couple of years. At the next board meeting in July, we'll be aiming to pull that together to some extent to talk about what the next step should be on that project. On dynamic risk management, or macro hedging if you prefer, the board's starting to develop the model for that. The idea is to develop a complete model focusing mainly on interest rate management and then go out and do some outreach on the model before deciding whether to pursue that with more formal exposure afterwards. And that discussion is still in the relatively early stages, I'd say. For most of last year, the board was talking about the mechanics of risk management, how it works, and is now starting to build up a model to see whether we can develop a model for that. On the implementation area, I wanted to highlight IFRS 17 insurance contracts. Obviously, that's one of the big things the board's been working on. We set up a transition resource group for that, which has met a couple of times and is looking at some of the issues that have been brought forward on that. And in fact, at next week's board meeting, the board will be looking at a couple of possible small amendments to IFRS 17 in the light of some things that came up as a result of the TRG discussions. I'll come back to implementation in a second, but I just wanted to mention the taxonomy as well. The end of the paper mentions some taxonomy issues. Now, on implementation, a couple of things I wanted to say, and then I'm going to hand over to Jarvid, who's going to say a bit more. There was an Interpretations Committee meeting earlier this week, and one thing we'd like to focus on particularly is an exposure draft we've got out on accounting policy changes. And what I'll do at this stage is hand over to Jarvid to explain that, and then when he's explained that, I'll come back and talk about Agenda Papers 1A and 1B briefly before we open it up for any questions or comments from you. So, Jarvid, do you want to pick up?
Yeah, thank you, Peter. So, like Peter said, I just wanted to sort of advertise this exposure draft on accounting policy changes. It's referred to in paragraph 21 of your paper. It is open for comments till 27 July, and I would encourage any interested parties to submit comments by that date. So as part of the update, Peter talked about the work of the Interpretations Committee. Now, very often the committee responds to questions that are submitted to it by publishing agenda decisions. And these agenda decisions often include helpful explanatory information that helps entities apply the requirements in IFRS standards. Now, why does the committee do this? Their main objective in including this material is to reduce identified diversity in practice and promote greater consistency in the application of IFRS standards. Now, this material might often provide companies with new information that might prompt them to revisit some of the accounting that they've applied to those transactions or events. But currently, the requirements in IFRS 8 create a barrier from applying those changes. So the board is proposing this narrow scope amendment, which aims to make it easier for companies to apply these changes. And by making it easier, we hope that this will promote greater consistency and improve the overall quality of financial reporting. Now, we have published an overview document as well that accompanies the ED, and we have also published a webcast. Both of these are available on the project page on our website. And if anyone would be interested in a hard copy of the overview document, just let me or anyone else here know, and we can get you a copy of the same. So with that, maybe I'll hand it back to you. Peter.
Just if there are any questions.
Yeah, if there's any questions on that, yeah.
I guess looking at that IFRIC, I was very troubled by the fact that it would elevate the decision-making of IFRIC without due process and provide a simplified method for those accounting changes versus other accounting changes that probably are equally supportable. I just found it very problematic.
Yeah, no, that's a fair concern. We have heard that concern from others as well. Now, the board did consider this, and I think when the board looked at this, it didn't see the decision so much as elevating the status of agenda decisions so much, as more as it just identifies agenda decisions as one of the sources that might lead a company to change an accounting policy, and there is an identified problem in this area. Companies do face a barrier, and overall we think applying these changes would promote greater consistency, and therefore I think we think that lowering the hurdle for these type of changes is justified. And the other thing, I think differentiating these type of changes from other type of changes is mainly because I think the board thinks that for other types of changes, entities generally have time to plan and prepare and implement those changes, whereas for agenda decisions, even though they're not mandated by IFRS standards, companies are often expected to apply them. So based on that, I think it creates some sort of justification. And it's not so much giving them authoritative status, as more of just identifying them as one of the sources that might lead a company to change it. So,
but isn't the perceived expectation of complying with them a problem in the base case? Because companies should be comfortable with their policies and decisions currently, unless they have an error, and then they should be subject to the full requirements of an accounting change or a correction of an error.
Yeah, and I think the board did look at this whole question about whether it would be an error or a change in accounting policy was also considered. It is discussed in the basis, but I think one of the key things is that in a lot of cases, these agenda decisions just provide a new way of looking at the information that's in IFRS standards, a way that the company may not have seen before. It just the committee, after doing the thorough analysis and due diligence on the question, just brings together the research and analysis from everywhere, and it just provides a new way of thinking. And in a lot of cases, this would not have been information that would have been available or reasonably have been expected to be obtained by a company. So in a lot of cases, I think the board is comfortable that it may not be an error in a lot of cases, but it just provides a new way of thinking and would more be in the lines of an accounting policy change.
So if we go back in U.S., we used to have something we referred to as speech gap, where the SEC would have would be invited to various conferences, and based on their speech, companies were expected to revise their policies. And I just think it's a bad precedent to start going down and making those revisions, and then I'll be quiet.
Sorry, if it's helpful, I'll just, on the screen, just helpful if I come to the tables, that I think what's important to make clear, Sandra, and you know this, is that this exposure, the agenda decision process and how the committee works is already part of the process. And this exposure draft doesn't change that process in any way. So this is just trying to help companies effectively that are in the situation of potentially having got new information. And what I'll describe is, and this is all spelled out in our due process handbook, is what the board views as, so what happens when the committee publishes an agenda decision that might have explanatory information? That's not changing existing requirements at all that are there. It's simply having been asked a question, simply the question usually comes to the committee because there's been identified diversity and how people are applying the requirements. Having done a lot of work and analysis, the committee's reached the conclusion that the principles and requirements and the standards are provide an adequate basis. There isn't a need to change the requirements. However, rather than just be unhelpful and have a line that says the principles and requirements are okay, that we've been told, and we think it's a very good way to try and support and encourage consistent application, is then to spell out the committee's reasons, you know, an explanation of how and why they reached their decision. So it doesn't change any requirements. What the due process handbook explains is that any material in those agenda decisions should be viewed as helpful, informative, and persuasive. It doesn't create anything new. It just brings together sometimes pieces of information that perhaps weren't obvious to people to bring together. So it'll sometimes, in explaining the requirements, draw out what was the board's objective that could be explained on the basis, etc. So there's no new requirements, but it's bringing together information, and potentially in bringing that together, it potentially includes information that we hope is helpful, informative, and persuasive. And I think another thing that's important to note is there is due process around this, so that whenever the committee has put these out, it's put out on a tentative basis. There's a comment letter process, and they consider comments before it gets finalised, which is a reason why I think they felt that if we want to do something for that population, there is, you can distinguish those in a sense from potentially some other voluntary changes. But this change doesn't change that status. It doesn't change that process. It simply says, what it's proposing to do is simply saying, when you are applying IAS 8, if you as the company decide to change an accounting policy, this is just a change in how you might do your transition.
So, I mean, obviously these issues were fully debated and deliberated by the board as well, and cognizant of the views that you express, and there's comfort that this is better as an overall solution.
Stephen? I had the same point really as Sandy, but it's developed on, so I just wanted to reinforce there are a lot of people concerned that things have changed. The rule book might have changed, but things have changed, and the IFRIC are potentially venturing into areas that historically they may not have done. So a number of companies were caught by IFRIC 23 agenda decision about interest on tax, which resulted in a change in accounting policy, which the audit firms then enforced as if it was an accounting policy change. So this just seems to lend a greater legitimacy to what is coming out as agenda decisions.
I think the board is very cognizant of those concerns and very aware of those concerns, and making sure that due process is followed, and that there isn't standard change. There'll be board members who are all over these issues, and the deliberations in essence stay with the board.
Yeah, and I think I'd just add that the committee is also very careful when they publish agenda decisions. They do have an extensive discussion before they publish the agenda decision, and they consider whether what they're putting out in agenda decision, they're very conscious of the fact that it should not create any new requirement. It should not change IFRS standards through the back door. It's more just explaining the requirements that already exist in IFRS standards, so they do that
analysis.
Any other questions for Jared before we head back over to Peter? Okay, thank you.
Just as a postscript to that decision, that discussion, by the way, the IFRIC 23 is an agenda decision as of the types we were talking about. That's actually an interpretation, which is a change in the standards, and that's been through a more extensive review process. But clearly the questions that Sandra raised, I think it's obviously one of the big discussions probably on that exposure draft. I wanted to do three more things before throwing it open to you. The first is this paper is an update to April, and we promised we'd give you an oral update on what happened in the May meeting. Most of the things the board discussed in May are actually on topics we're talking about at this meeting, and of the other topics, there's nothing I particularly want to highlight at this stage. And then agenda papers 1A and 1B are a report back to you on what the advice you gave us at your last meeting, your last separate meetings, and what the subsequent follow-up has been on that. Again, there wasn't anything I particularly wanted to highlight in either of those papers. So does anybody have any questions or comments on the work programme or recent developments, or on the our report back on the feedback you've given us in the past?
Martin?
Maybe an expression of slight disappointment on the. We had a discussion last time on the acquisition-related intangibles other than goodwill, and I know that the views were varying, but there was a tentative decision of the board to not make any alterations there, and I read that one of the reasons. Possibly was that if you would get rid of them and consider it goodwill, it would trigger the impairments earlier on. It would, because the goodwill, there had to trigger a goodwill impairment sooner than without them. I would think that the board is not yet out of the woods how to adjust goodwill impairment, and why already decide not to alter this where you're not out of the woods yet in goodwill impairment. It's if you come up with a really helpful solution on goodwill impairment that makes it very practical, maybe it's a good opportunity to revisit the acquisition-related intangibles other than goodwill.
So that discussion was mainly about whether to consider putting some intangibles back into goodwill rather than accounting for them separately in a business combination. The discussion was about intangibles with an indefinite life, because they're the ones that are not being amortized. And so it's easier to consider putting them back into goodwill than the ones that have a finite life. And the main discussion was largely on cost-benefit grounds of do you save the cost of identifying them separately, and do you lose information by not reporting them separately? And overall, the board felt that there wasn't that much of a cost-benefit argument in favour of separating them, and so decided not to pursue that argument. The particular point you mentioned from memory was saying that we know the impairment test is imperfect. It's I think inevitably imperfect, because it's based on estimates of what's going to happen in the future and is somewhat subjective. And some people have concerns already that goodwill impairment is being recognised too little and too late, and that at least cosmetically, if you put more things into the goodwill, into the balance, it may make the perception of that problem worse. I think not the reality, but I think it might make the perception worse. I think that's what that comment was really directed at.
Any other questions for Peter? Okay. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's move on to the next agenda